The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 7 a.m. April 28th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
The pro-life label is the Republicans playing politics with women's lives.
Resist!
Let's be blunt. The Republican bill will make it more likely, not less likely, that women and their children will die.
Resistance.
American women deserve better than this mean Republican bill, and American women are here to fight back.
Resist!
Thank you for listening to K Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm Kelly the Voice. There is so much to get to, so let's dive right in. Here's the news. Obamacare is the law of the land. In a sound defeat, the Republican efforts died gloriously on the Senate floor. And the turtle was so sad.
I also want to thank the president and the vice president, who couldn't have been more involved and more helpful. So, yes, this is a disappointment.
A disappointment indeed. Our friends over in the House, we thank them as well.
I regret that our efforts were simply not enough this time. Now, imagine many of our colleagues on the other side are celebrating, probably pretty happy about all this. But the American people are hurting and they need relief. Our friends on the other side decided early on they didn't want to engage with us in a serious way, to help those suffering under Obamacare.
Now that's an improvement, don't you think? Elizabeth Warren fought as she does.
Frankly, I am sick of coming down to the Senate floor to explain to Republicans what Planned Parenthood does. I am sick of explaining that it provides millions of women with birth control, cancer screenings, and STI tests every year. I am sick of pointing out again and again that federal dollars do not fund abortion services at Planned Parenthood or anywhere else. Women come to the floor. We explain, we cite facts, but Republicans would rather base health care policy on politics than on facts.
And the Democrats did what they could. But in the end, it came down to us, to our phone calls, to our protests, to our tweets, our stories, our town halls. In the end, there were hundreds arrested and many more were thrown out of the Capitol. The group DAPT. The National Grassroots Disability Organization fought the hardest, literally putting their bodies on the line, throwing themselves out of their own wheelchairs to be carried out by Capitol Police. Who knows in the end how many of them were arrested? Mitch McConnell and Donald were severely weakened by this. This Republican Party has proven once again that they cannot legislate. The 2008 Republican nominee for president, the quote-unquote maverick, cast the deciding vote and killed the Republican hopes. And though he gets a gold star for today, it was he, with Mitch McConnell and their Republicans, who have been bandying this healthcare bout as though it was a game. Last night, people across the country sat at home and watched the play-by-play, be it in live feed, CNN, C-SPAN, MSNBC, not out of some fascination in politics, not out of an allegiance to one side or another, but in fear of what would become of their mother, their sisters, their friends, their own healthcare. They treated us like a partisan football, carelessly, in some cynical gambit. And I know some of these Republicans are relieved and some are proud and some are angry and some are sad, and while I'd like to revel in their failure, I can't. Because they put millions through hell, and they are not done. This was a big deal, but they now will continue with their quest to destroy Medicaid and Medicare and so on. So let's talk Medicaid for a sec. Robert Reich had a post that lays out the facts, which are good to know, so that we can educate the conservatives among us. I have posted this on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance as well. Republicans frequently describe the growth of Medicaid as, quote, out of control, noting that Medicaid spending has grown twice as fast as the economy since its creation in the mid-1960s. What's the truth? Yes, Medicaid spending has grown twice as fast as the economy since Medicaid was created, but it is not out of control. 1. The rise in Medicaid spending has been slower than the overall rise in healthcare spending, which now accounts for 18% of the entire U.S. economy. Medicaid has gone from 0.49% of the economy to 3.02% between 1970 and 2015. But in the same period, Medicare spending has grown from 0.71% to 3.58%, and private health spending from 1.44% to 5.94%. 2. A major reason healthcare spending has risen so fast is we have a costly, wasteful, fragmented system for delivering healthcare. 3. Medicaid actually serves comparable patients less expensively than private coverage because of Medicaid's low reimbursement, low provisions, and increasing use of managed care. In general, Medicaid's cost per enrollee have grown more slowly than Medicare or private payers. 4. In recent decades, the growth in Medicaid spending has resulted almost entirely from efforts to increase the insurance coverage by expanding Medicaid to new groups. Pregnant women and children in the 1990s, and most recently, low-income adults without dependents under the Affordable Care Act. The ACA expansion population surprised estimators with higher-than-expected need for services, and that's because so many Americans lacked health care. And that is the truth. You may or may not have been aware of this moment 2 weeks ago.
The question is on the Lee Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Oh, in the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
Further amendments.
Any further amendments?
The Republican-controlled House Appropriations Committees passed a repeal of the 2001 Authorization for the Use of Military Force Act, the AUMF, which has been used to justify ongoing military actions in regions around the world spanning the George W. Bush, Obama, and now Trump administrations, taking a surprising, yet welcome, step towards canceling the blank check for endless war. This was one bright spot in our government news that gave me hope. Well, I was wrong. Paul Pissant Ryan, Republican from Wisconsin, the Ayn Randian Speaker of the House, killed the amendment without a debate or discussion. Just took it out. If passed into law as part of the Department of Defense bill, it would repeal the 2001 AUMF 8 months after the enactment of its legislation. That would allow for plenty of time for Congress to finally live up to its constitutional obligation to debate and vote on any new AUMF. Barbara Lee, who got this through and continues to fight for it today, said, quote, "It is far past time for Congress to do its job and for the Speaker to allow a debate and a vote on this vital national security issue. Congress has been missing in action on matters of war and peace for nearly 16 years. Republican leadership showed last night that they will do anything to maintain the status quo of refusing to debate and vote on our ongoing wars in abdication of our constitutional responsibility. Our men and women in uniform deserve better," unquote. Cowards. You know what? Paul Ryan is a coward. These Republicans are cowards. And what? We trust putting this decision in Donald Trump's hands because he makes such rational, sound decisions. Still, Barbara Lee will continue to fight, and so must we. The House passed the Make America Secure Appropriations Act.
Yes. Of course, that's actually what it's called.
Combining four of the 12 annual appropriations bills into one piece of legislation, including funding for the Department of Defense, DOD, the Military and Veterans Affairs, Energy and Water Development, and the Legislative Branch. It provides nearly nothing to Energy and Water, everything to our already bloated DOD, and $1.6 billion to our border wall.
You suck!
There was a bipartisan agreement that this wall will not deter illegal immigration. Texas Republican Representative Will Hurd has called the wall, quote, "the most expansive and least effective way to secure our border,"
unquote. And Mexico, of course, has refused to pay for the wall's construction. However, House Republicans remain inexplicably committed to constructing this pointless wall at taxpayers' expense. This $1.6 billion, by the way, is only a fraction of the wall's long-term estimated cost. An internal Homeland Security memo has predicted completing the wall will cost an estimated $21.6 billion. Republicans like Donald's budget chief
and Leprechaun's cousin, Mick Mulvaney,
and Republican Mo Brooks of Alabama are now signaling that they are willing to force government to shut down if the Senate refuses to approve border wall funding. It is unacceptable that Trump and his cronies are willing to shut down the government, cutting off vital services, and cost taxpayers millions of dollars to funding for a wall, which is just to show a little man that he has a big wall. The Bayer-Monsanto merger is on track. This merger would complete a sweeping restructuring of agricultural biotechnology industry, creating the big three companies, where just 2 years ago there were six major rivals. The merger substantially eliminates competition across a number of important markets. It could squeeze out smaller rivals and saddle farmers and consumers with higher prices, reduced choice and less innovation, and health and environmental devastation. Iowa farmers face a crisis. Crop prices have fallen by more than 50% since 2013, and with no end in sight. At the same time, Iowa State University found that farmers hold more debt and possess fewer capital reserves to fall back on. In fact, farmers' debt levels are almost as high as they were prior to the farm crisis in the mid-1980s. All of our oligarch and chief supporters will be hurt by his soft on big business, corrupt DOJ, allowing this merger to take place. Farmers are already being squeezed. The price of corn and seed is more than doubled in the past 10 years, from $51 per acre in 2006 to $102 in 2015, as a result of similar consolidation, including Monsanto's purchase of Dycalib and Cargill's international seed business. If the Monsanto-Bayer merger is permitted, this problem will only intensify, further limiting farmers' choices and making the products they need even more expensive. The merger does not just strengthen Monsanto's control over the corn and seed industry. It also helps the company grow its dominance in other areas, like fertilizers, pesticides, and precision farming technology. Monsanto's goal is to bundle all of these products together, sort of like a cable company bundles internet, phone, and television. And just like with the cable companies, the service will be overpriced and shoddy because it'll leave the farmers with no other option.
Oh no!
Yet, this mega merger is moving forward with barely a murmur of concern from our elected officials in Washington or the elected officials in Europe. Not a single senator raised this matter in confirmation hearings of the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. Even worse, the nominee to lead the Department of Justice's antitrust division is a former lobbyist who asserted in the recent interview that a monopoly is perfectly legal. It is not surprising that Monsanto and Bayer alone spent $120 million in the last decade on lobbying elected officials at the federal level.
You suck!
And while stopping the Monsanto-Bayer merger would be a good first step, we need to go even further to prevent these giants from bullying farmers. Monsanto and other agricultural giants are just too big. A century ago, President Teddy Roosevelt broke up the trusted monopolies of his time because he understood that the deck was stacked against consumers, farmers, and small businesses. We need to take a cue from Roosevelt and break up Monsanto and other big ag corporations like it. Time and again, studies have shown that monopolies result in less innovation, fewer choices, and higher prices for farmers and consumers. We cannot continue to line the pockets of wealthy executives in far-off cities. By breaking up these giants, we can restore competition and bring vitality back to our rural communities. And Donald's base. This week sucked, guys. The black hole of politics is sucking the light and the air out of the room. Yeah. We had a healthcare win, but it was a little more than a relief than a victory. We have our unhinged president's Nuremberg speech.
I'm especially proud to speak to you as the honorary president of the Boy Scouts of America.
Indoctrinating his Hitler youth in the most terrifying videos I've seen since the invasion of Iraq. And the media, who is obsessed with personalities, is covering Scaramucci like he's the invasion of Iraq. Jeff Zandberg on Sessions, will he stay or will he go? And the tweets, the goddamn tweets, like each new absurdity coming down from on high is new, different, important. Meanwhile, the White House is passing spending packages, rolling back regulations. Bayer is merging with Monsanto, and bombing raids are killing thousands of civilians overseas. The Endangered Species Act is endangered. Our planet is at a tipping point. Flint is still drinking out of water bottles. Black men and women are being shot every day by cops as well as Hispanics. Hate crimes are on the rise. Bees are dying. And we are heading towards an economic collapse. The resistance is rising, but all the media can talk about is palace intrigue and the bloody reality show that is the White House and the Sopranos cast without the lovable anti-hero, because there are no heroes anymore. It is a joke. And the rest of the world watches as this country dissolves into a banana republic. DeVos is screwing the students, Ryan Zinke is screwing the Native Americans, Ben Carson, the poor, Betsy DeVos, the students, Paul Ryan, the people, Mitch McConnell, the government, Scott Pruitt, the environment, Tom Price, our healthcare, and all of them, the people. Screw you, House Judiciary Committee, and your slanderous Russia-filleting propaganda attempts at further ramming a good woman's face into the mud. You are a joke. Screw you, Trump voters who looked the other way from his racism and sexism. And screw you, Trump voters who embraced it. Screw you, Breitbart, Drudge Report, Alex Jones, Roger Stone, and anyone else who has aided in turning this country into a Jerry Springer's episode. Screw you, McCain. Screw your hypocritical, partisan, warmongering, party before people, cowardly ass. I'm sorry. Thank you for bucking your party and standing up for what was right for the first time ever, legislatively, and I am grateful. But you ran on repealing Obamacare and taking healthcare away from millions, you callous hack. You are undoubtedly a war hero, and thank you so much for your service. But at home, sir, you are a coward. Our media can lavish you with all the praise in the world, and it can call that hypocritical speech that you gave, that someone else wrote, the best speech ever since the flying spaghetti monster blessed humans with the powers of speech. You are all bark and no bite. Your well-sculpted PR presence as a defender of human rights, who tells it like it is, a maverick. And then there is the reality. And don't take my word for it, sir. Here is Adam Johnson of the LA Times. Quote, he was opposed to President George W. Bush's NSA wiretap program before he supported it. He defended the estate tax before he harshly criticized it. He vaguely opposed torture, but undermined legislative efforts to stop it. He embraced Social Security privatization before saying otherwise twice. Positions evolve. That's fine. But politicians don't build their entire brand on principle only to shift stances in a seemingly arbitrary fashion. Another problem with latest wave of McCain hierarchies is that they're proof of the low standards in the age of Trump. In the wake of his cancer diagnosis, McCain received praise from pundits for a moment in 2008 when he corrected a racist voter who called Obama an Arab.
He's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign
is
all
about. But the fact that McCain casually contrasted being an Arab with being decent without defending Arabs as such goes largely ignored. The media grades Republicans on such a steep curve these days that the most basic instance of common decency is taken as evidence of profound moral courage. For example, McCain's heroic return to the Senate floor on Tuesday to defend his Senate traditions, which he said had been cast aside by his colleagues in their hurry to repeal Obamacare. Outlets from CNN to the Washington Post to ABC framed his return as a swan song appeal to patriotism, a defense of decency by a lion of the Senate. Bird in these reports, however, is that while McCain condemned the partisan cynical nature of the bill being rammed through the Congress, he proceeded to vote for every measure that advanced it anyway. Unquote. Okay. His votes after that, he actually voted right, so give the man a cookie. No, take it back again for steeping millions of Americans in fear for 3 days for no other reason than partisan cowardice. And then there is this delightful moment of his heavenly damn speech. Quote, the Obama administration and congressional Democrats shouldn't have forced through Congress without any opposition support a social and economic change as massive as Obamacare. Unquote. Son of a... There were 10 months of hearings and 160 Republican amendments. Count them.
160 Republican amendments that got into the bill, you simpering bastard. And screw you, you soulless, hopeless, craven Republicans for legislating against the people, against the poor, against the sick, against the elderly, against children, against me, against everyone who is not a conservative, white, and wealthy and healthy. I don't have diplomacy in me today, so welcome to my rage train and enjoy the ride. As you have no doubt heard, Herr Donald der Gruppenführer announced in a series of twinkle-fingered tweets that the U.S. military will no longer allow transgender troops to serve in any capacity, reversing the Obama administration's... Reversing the Obama administration's July 2016 policy of permitting transgender troops to serve openly. This was just one of the major headlines this week, but certainly not the least. Trump's claim service will, quote, burden and disrupt the military is at odds with both common decency and objective facts. A Pentagon-commissioned nonpartisan RAND Corporation study found that providing gender confirmation treatment to transgendered service people would have a minimal impact on the military's combat readiness. Further, the report found that it would cost between $2 and $8 million to provide gender confirmation services to transgender troops. While this amount sounds significant, it is a mere 0.01% of the $598 billion that the U.S. military spent during its fiscal year of 2015. In contrast, the military spends an annual $84 million on erectile dysfunction medications such as Viagra, 10 times the annual cost of transgender medical care. Luckily, the adults in the military are ignoring this latest distraction until the Trumpelstiltskin does something officially. The military does not take orders by tweet, Donald. Then again, should we be terrified that now the military is not accepting direct orders from the president? No, what am I saying? Of course we should be happy about that. It's Donald.
Fake news.
Let's not get comfortable with the idea that our draft-dodging coward of an oligarch's callous, ignorant, hateful, anti-people, anti-troops, reckless banning of over an estimated 15,500 transgender-serving members of the military was some random isolated assault on the LGBTQ community from a desperate man grasping for anything to distract from his failing healthcare bill, inept floundering presidency, or a simple desperate gambit to pull back his idiot hordes who are waffling at his shunning of their golden boy and elf on the shelf gone dark, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. If it were only that simple. But it seems the white, oh so White House is just 6 months in and adopting a more inclusionary stance on bringing LGBTQ peoples into the fold of their outdated fears soaked in bigoted hate through rhetoric, legislation, and now litigation. To set the stage, in April of this year, a federal appeals court issued a historic ruling in favor of job protections for gay workers. It's about time. A historic nationwide first, the court ruled that sexual orientation discrimination is illegal under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Judge Diane Wood called it a, quote, common sense reality that it is actually impossible to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation without discriminating on the basis of sex, unquote. Specifically, the court held that the sex discrimination ban of the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 includes a bar on discriminating against gay, lesbian, or bisexual peoples. The 8-3 ruling represented a reversal of the court's past decisions on the topic, and it makes it the first federal appeals court to rule in favor of the protection for sexual orientation-based discrimination under existing federal law. In a year full of heart-sickening news headlines, this was a bright spot. Practically this whole entire week, however, was a bloody black hole. So this week, in an unusual move, the Justice Department, on the same day Donald issued his damn transgender military travel ban, stepped in and put their finger on the scales of a court case, something the Justice Department rarely does, and at that, only in the defense of civil rights in cases. Those days, however, are gone, as our government lubes up the country for yet another backslide closer to the 50s. Hell, if Mikey Pence had his way, we'd be back in the 1800s. So, in 2010, Donald Zardara's skydiving instructor filed a suit against his employer in a New York federal court alleging that the company terminated him for his sexual orientation in violation of Title VII. After lower court ruled, the case was appealed, and the second court invited outside parties to weigh in. Zarda v. Altitude Express is now before a full panel of judges at the court. Among Zarda's boosters is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, a largely autonomous federal agency that handles civil rights disputes in the workplace, which supported Zarda last month in its court filing. For several years, the EEOC has declared in federal court that Title VII bans anti-gay discrimination, saying that it is based on sex stereotyping and therefore discrimination on the basis of sex. So in walks Satan's law gnomes, Justice Department, on Wednesday to argue in a major federal lawsuit that the 1964 civil rights law doesn't protect gay workers from discrimination, therefore diverging from a separate autonomous federal agency that had supported the gay plaintiff's case. In an amicus brief filed at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, lawyers under Attorney General Jefferson Bogard Sessions contended that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans sexual discrimination, does not cover sexual orientation. The Justice Department argues in its latest brief, quote,
"The EEOC is not speaking for the United States on its position about the scope of Title VII is entitled to no deference beyond its power to persuade."
Unquote.
Asshole.
The scope of Title VII has been in dispute for years. It goes back to under President Obama when the government argued that Title VII's ban on sexual discrimination also included gender identity, thereby barring discrimination against transgender workers. But the Obama administration never went so far as to say the civil rights law also covered sexual orientation. It had in fact opposed the argument.
That is why you fail.
Claiming that its hands were tied by prior court precedent. Yet, in 2016, the Obama administration arguably dialed back its opposition by not trying to dismiss the case brought on those grounds. If Zarda's argument were to prevail, despite his unfortunate death in a base jumping accident in 2014, it would set a new precedent in the circuit by overturning two cases from the 2000s. Further, it would give momentum to the argument as a general matter, given the case in April, which ruled in favor of the lesbian who was issuing the same claim. We don't know how this case will go, but one thing is for sure. Donald and his people? All right, guys, I was going to continue with our shock doctrine preparedness training this episode, but with the healthcare stuff and the transgenders, there is just way too much stuff. So on Tuesday, we will talk about what we should expect in case we have a major environmental disaster. The resistance has won another victory. So have a beer, take a day, and be ready to fight again tomorrow. I appreciate all the listens and all the downloads. You can find my show on crabdiving.com. That's one word, C-R-A-B-D-I-V-I-N-G, under the K-Voice tab. Listen to the other great programming on the Crab Diving Network, especially the Crab Diving Podcast, for your news 5 days a week from 2 to 4. Rage and laugh with the boys. You can also download my show as a podcast wherever it is you get your podcast. You can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice or on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Okay, everybody, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Speaker Ryan called this mean bill pro-life.
Resist!
But this is just the biggest political play of all. Calling something pro-life
resist!
Won't keep women from dying in back alley abortions.
Take loss of resistance!
It won't help women pay for the cancer screenings that could save their lives. It won't help them take care of their families, have safe sex, or afford their medical bills. The pro-life label is the Republicans playing politics with women's lives.
Resist!